check it out.
Welcome to Top of the Class. Hear from education experts and get insights from high achievers to learn how you can do the same.
Get into those top schools.
Ready?
Proudly presented by Crimson Education, the world's leader in university admission support.
Hello and welcome to College Chats. I'm your host, Alex Cork, and today I chat with Crimson Education strategist and Harvard graduate, Gabe Gladstein. We discuss how students can stand out from the crowd, especially as standardized testing requirements continue to be dropped. Gabe shares some fantastic examples of what past students have done, as well as giving his own suggestions on how you can start something today. Let's chat with Gabe Gladstein. Hey Gabe, welcome to College Chats. It's awesome to have you on. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so my name's Gabe Gladstein. I'm from Santa Rosa, California. So that's Northern California near San Francisco. I went to Harvard and I got my BA in government. And then I got a master's degree from the nearby New England Conservatory of Music in music. And I'm a violinist, a singer, and a songwriter. I live in Los Angeles. I've worked at Crimson for nearly 6 years now. I created our US admissions program and I'm now the head of product development, which is super exciting. So I continue to work with students, but I also get to like design our new educational services and make sure that all of our services are on like, you know, the absolute forefront of the industry broadly.
Fantastic. And what are we going to focus on today?
So today I'd love to discuss what differentiate students in this day and age and, you know, kind of what can create a great applicant. I think that with especially this, you know, COVID and the most recent application season, which was really, really competitive, there's some confusion out there for students about what they can do to really stand out in the application process. And I think those things have changed over time. So what I want to talk about today is like, how do you develop a deep interest, which I think is the key to standing out? And then how do you build on that, you know, with your activities list and, your academic intellectual interests to really illustrate to colleges that you are something special.
So what kind of qualities do you think top universities are looking for in applicants?
One of the things we're seeing more of in like expectations from admissions officers at Harvard, Yale, Stanford, but they're, you know, a big part of what they're looking for is that flexibility. Mm. But it's not just like, you know, because I think some kids could interpret flexibility as being like, oh, well, so I need to be well-rounded. Like I need to have, you know, a lot of like different things, you know, a lot of different activities or represent a lot of different skill sets. And it's not so simple as that. I think what they want to see is deep intellectual engagement. And intellectual engagement is like, in a way, it's a form of like creative engagement. So it's, you know, investing time and energy into, you know, learning about one or, you know, maybe a couple things, but then it's developing your own takes on those things. It's developing your own insights and perspectives, you know, seeking out experiences in, you know, in those subjects or relating to those subjects or skill sets. And I think that's really like, that's what they're looking for. You know, they're not, I think the days of like, oh, I started an app and therefore like Harvard's going to let me in. Like those days are sort of actually kind of waning in my view. I think that, you know, so many kids now have tried to do that and pursue that path of that. You know, it's like anything, right? In admissions, there are cycles of things that are like exciting when they're new. And then, you know, too many people do them and they're no longer new. They're no longer the exciting thing. Like this year, we've seen some amazing applicants come through Crimson who basically like saw that or understood that trend and that change. And like anticipated it and adjusted. And they, you know, they adjusted this year, they adjusted last year. But, you know, a big pattern that we're seeing is like kids turning, you know, especially Gen Z, I think is like really focused on, you know, general, community service is not a broad enough term. It's more this notion of like thinking about the well-being of humanity. It seems like really broad, but it's true. It's like the way that kids are conceiving of their potential impact these days is like so different. I mean, when I was in high school, it was like, you know, if you start a charity and like raise $10,000, that's incredibly significant. And that's, what is it, like 12 years ago or something. It's completely different now. Like the thinking around like, what kind of impact can I have? And obviously, you know, this comes on the back of like some really inspiring people like Malala and, you know, Greta Thunberg and these sorts of kids who just like, you know, step into a huge international spotlight, but you don't have to be like them in order to have that kind of impact. And I think that that's I'm sure that's part of what you've observed. And, you know, part of what we've seen also on our end is like kids really embracing this notion of like, I'm going to do what I can, you know, what I'm capable of, and give as much of myself as I can to doing some good. And, you know, I'm going to find something that really sticks out to me or that I can really understand or wrap my head around. And then I'm going to explain it to other people. It's movement building, but it doesn't always have to be on a big scale. And that's what's been, I think, really exciting for me to see recently. And it's hard. It's hard to make that change. But, you know, it, just in terms of like what admissions officers expect and how to do that in a way that feels personal, you know, to for each kid rather than, you know, kind of contrived. And but yeah, I've been really impressed.
It feels so mature though, right? Like that whole, that understanding that you are thinking bigger than yourself. It's not just thinking about the college admissions process and what you're going to put on your application. It's like, who am I as a person and what am I going to give back to the world? It's as you said, like, it's not about just creating one thing and saying, that's my ticket to college. It's creating like a holistic story that really portrays what you want to do, not just at college, but possibly after college. That takes a whole lot of maturity and, I guess, long-term thinking. Is that something that you think students are usually good at or not so good at?
I think that your average student is probably not that great at that type of thinking. And I think it's interesting because there are some students we see who do this well as a result of being really just plugged in to what is happening right now in the world or in society. And that's, I mean, you know, more and more it's happening through things like TikTok, you know, those types of mediums where, I mean, you'd be surprised, but TikTok is not all dance trends, you know?
Yeah.
It's a lot of like videos of very young people talking about extremely serious issues in their community. And you know, their community could be local, state, national, whatever it is. But, you know, often explaining them in a, you know, I mean, you know, the longest TikTok video you can make is a minute. So at most, it's going to take them a minute to explain a really complicated issue. There are a ton of great TikToks where they like present evidence, kind of show that evidence for like how they came to this conclusion and you know, or this problem that they're pointing out. Often it has to do with the way, you know, fundamentally it comes down to the way a certain group of people is treated. And there's a real thread that runs through this generation of kids, Gen Z, that I've just been like so impressed by, like this thread of empathy and the desire to connect and understand in a way that I've always like, I think I've always wanted millennials, like my generation, to experience more of. And I just feel like it didn't hit us in the same way. But Gen Z grew up in this like really complicated world where they were exposed to these problems and what's going on in the world right away, like right off the bat. You know, I mean, from basically as long as they can remember, right? They've had YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, you know, they've had all these different ways of connecting with what's going on in the world. For us, for my generation, like that happened a little later. And that difference, I think, is enormous because, you know, for us, it was like we started with YouTube and at the beginning, you know, Facebook, at the beginning, it was all about us. It was all about like, well, how do you feel? And, you know, what do you want to say in your like, you know, personal YouTube channel? And so I think that created a mindset for millennials of a little bit more sort of self-centeredness. But Gen Z is like, I think often treats this very differently. There's a lot more concern for, you know, what is happening, what other people's experiences are. So that's like, to me, like that's kind of the best, most natural way that kids can come upon this perspective is just by being tuned in to global events, what's going on in the world. It could mean reading the New York Times, and that's great. Like that's a great way to learn, to figure out, but it doesn't have to mean that. It can really like, it could be through the social media that they're already using, but it's about how they use it. And look, do dance trends. Like that's fun. Like engage with these things in a fun way. I think every student I work with, like I always encourage them to like seek out the parts of these things that bring them joy. Mm-hmm. But also think constructively. You know, think like, okay, where are the pockets on this platform of information that like I want to seek out? I want to find out what's going on in my community. Who's making the content that's like breaking some news or, you know, revealing some inequities in the world? And what can I do? The great thing about these TikToks is oftentimes like they'll end with some kind of call to action. You know, these kids, like they're brilliant the way they're thinking up like how to make an impact, even from just where they're sitting, you know, in their whatever, their family's house in whatever country. And I think it's a type of engagement and it's seeking out, you know, that content and those opportunities to do something, to have an impact.
What do you think about the academically brilliant student, right? Because obviously the SATs and the subject tests, et cetera, have taken a significant backward step over the last year or so, particularly during COVID. And is there still a place for a student who just puts their nose in the books? I mean, obviously not to the extent where they have basically no extracurriculars. They would have some extracurriculars, but their primary reason for going to college or their primary card that they're going to play in the admissions process is academics. Is that still a card that students could potentially play, or is that now no longer enough?
It's not enough. But to be clear, like, I don't think that academics alone have been enough for a good little while. Because I think even when I was applying to college, it wasn't enough to just be the best, you know, academically or in terms of your grades. Well, you needed more than that. And I think that it's interesting to see us having the subject test. I'm glad you brought that up, because historically there have been these things like the subject test, which are what I would call like low hanging fruit. So like very easy opportunities to show that you have some academic skill in a certain area. And those getting taken away, I think, is not necessarily a bad thing, actually, because in the end, I think what colleges really want to see is deeper engagement. And just, you know, taking the like biology subject test to prove that you did well in your biology class is not that interesting, right? It doesn't really tell them that much about you. But volunteering at your, you know, local like marine biology, you know, conservation center over the summer and meeting a scientist there who you then work with during the next school year, and you end up like, you know, assisting some of their research, and that introduces you to somebody who ends up being a mentor and writes a letter of recommendation for you saying this person is like brilliant, you know, next hope for marine biology. Like, those are the sorts of things that colleges are interested in. And the thing is, like, what that really requires, it's not some kind of like innate academic brilliance. That's the thing, is like, that is less important than just sheer initiative, like spunk. Mm. That's what they want to see. They want to, like, is this kid sitting, you know, in their room hoping or waiting for an opportunity to come to them? Or are they going out and finding one? I think when it comes to academically brilliant students, like, look, I want to be clear. You don't have to start a charity. Like, you don't have to do some incredible, like, you know, community service project, or, you know, you don't have to be a genius artist. You don't have to be a genius at all, really. All you need to do is pursue something with depth. That's really what they're looking for, is the development of a deep interest. And this is like, this is a huge part of Crimson's Don Appier curriculum. So this is like how we work with students and provide strategy for them during the 3 years before they apply to college. It's thinking about, okay, how do we help each and every one of our students? And it doesn't matter if they're aiming for Harvard or they're aiming for a much lower ranked school. We want every one of our students to develop a deep interest. A deep interest is basically something that you can talk, it could be literally anything, but it's something that you can talk about like off the cuff, and you're so fluent in the subject that you can make someone who has like no idea about this subject interested in it. So it's like, you know, it would be like if I started talking to you about like the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire in the 1920s in the United States, and I told you all the reasons why like that actually led to the, you know, labor movement. And, you know, for that reason, like, we have unions today. And, you know, it's like just diving into one like particular element of something very deeply, very passionately, and then pursuing it. So it's like you build that knowledge and then you got to do something with that knowledge. And so I gave the example earlier, right? If you're like interested in biology, you go and find a lab, or you find, you know, somebody locally, somebody close to you who is doing something related to the field you're interested in. But, you know, it can be anything. Like, there's this great example that I love that I think about a lot, where, so this girl was, we can call her Rachel. She had a deep interest in teaching. And so she was looking for opportunities to get involved in ways that other students aren't. And that's the key initiative, right? So it's like, what is everyone doing? And if everyone's doing that thing, try to find something different. Like, that's really, you know, you want to differentiate yourself. And so she was looking around, okay, I'm really interested in being a teacher. What can I do now? I'm just in high school. What can I do now to engage with that interest? She discovered that teachers at her local elementary school, so the, you know, school for younger grades, they had tons of tasks and chores that they were doing. You know, these teachers were staying hours after school to complete those tasks on behalf of their students without any assistance. And of course, you know, school budgets being what they are, they didn't have any money to hire anyone. So there's no one to help them. And there was no structure for a volunteer program or anything like that. But she went to the school, regardless, she went, she talked to a teacher there. And of course, as you can imagine, right, that teacher was more than happy to have her help out because, you know, the teacher's totally overwhelmed. So every day after her own school is over, Rachel would go over to the elementary school and help for an hour. And so that's like, that's the beginning, right? That's the beginning of something. Not everyone is doing that. That's something a little different and it's engaging with her interest. But how do you go deeper than that even? How do you build on that? And of course, Rachel did that. So one day, Rachel was talking with one of the main teachers that she helped. The teacher wanted to start like an after-school reading program for her kids. But of course, as you can imagine, she doesn't have time, right?
Yeah.
She's a teacher. There's no time to start it. So Rachel decided to do the research herself and figure out, okay, what are some like other after-school reading programs that have worked at other schools? She read about it. And with the teacher's support, she went and presented to the principal of the school, here's the program I want to start. You know, here's how I'd run it. Here's the curriculum. Here's how kids would get involved. I'll do the logistics, you know, and the principal approved it. So the end result was she ended up running this amazing program at an elementary school that was like completely unique, that, you know, didn't exist in her community and benefited these kids enormously. So look, that's not Greta Thunberg, right? Like that's not some kind of international huge thing. And yet, that's incredibly unique and incredibly special. And, you know, I mean, that level of engagement, that's years of work and that level of engagement and serious commitment to her interest. I mean, that's like she, you know, she's going to Harvard. Like that's the, and in the end, she got into all of the schools she applied. She's a super, super successful applicant. So when I'm talking about developing a deep interest, that's really the kind of thing I'm talking about is like that level of focused pursuit. You don't have to be a genius. You don't have to be wealthy. You know, it really like, I think in general, the requirements or prerequisites for that are pretty low. You just have to be interested. You have to be engaged and you have to take some initiative. It's not just going to come to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. Absolutely. And I think that was a fantastic example. One thing that I'm interested in is that if students are looking around saying, okay, I want to differentiate myself. I want to do something unique, but realistically, I only know of students in my school and what they're doing. Right. And there's not many other students, like say, for instance, here in Australia or elsewhere around the world where there's not a huge amount of students kind of aiming for, you know, your Ivy Leagues, et cetera.
Right.
It can be a bit difficult to kind of figure out, well, what is everyone else doing and how can I differentiate myself? Because you might say, oh, look, I'm going to develop my own app because no one else in my school is developing an app. But when you go to the Harvard application office or Harvard admissions office, there's heaps of students who have created an app. So you don't really stand out. So how would you go about as a student figuring out what is unique, what can differentiate yourself from the rest of the cohort or the applicant cohort? Is it like talking to a teacher who's been there for a number of years and may have more experience? Obviously, like at Crimson, we have a good overview of students from all around the world who are applying and kind of give students a bit of a leg up there for sure. But is there any tip that you would have for students to kind of figure out what exactly could be their niche and how could they find that?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. So there are a couple answers to that. I think, first of all, you know, there's the first question of like, you know, and I've come across a lot of kids who are like this, who are like, I don't have a passion. Like I don't know what I want to do in life. I don't know, like, you know, some kids love music, some kids, you know, but some kids just don't have that. You know, they get to high school and they're like, I haven't found my thing yet. And I think there's, you know, there's a thing that I call the passion myth, which is this notion that like, if you don't feel this somehow like innate connection or innate love for one thing, then you just like don't have a passion. You never will. It's just not true. That's not how anybody works. You know, I was fortunate because my parents introduced me. Like I started playing music when I was 2 years old, started playing drums, and I started playing violin when I was 5. So my parents basically helped music to become my passion. I had that advantage. A lot of kids don't have that type of advantage. So they'll get to high school and they just don't know what they love yet. And that's fine. It's not a big deal. When I'm talking about a deep interest, I'm not talking about something that you necessarily innately love or innately, you know, feel this connection to. It's just something that you have decided consciously to learn more about, to dive into. It doesn't need to be your career. Like, you know, this Rachel example that I gave before, she doesn't have to pursue a career in teaching after that. It could just be that she's interested in education during high school. You know, she can do whatever she wants once she gets into college. And that's the advantage of going to a US college. It's like, you can really do whatever you like. Mm-hmm. But the point being that like developing a deep interest is really just about making a decision that you are going to like basically follow, you know, kind of a winding path wherever it leads. But you have to be willing to take that risk, right? It costs a lot in time. It costs a lot in energy to really pursue a deep interest. So I think that's where it starts, is being willing to take that leap. And, you know, again, a kid, you know, will say, well, okay, but how do I even know what to take a leap with? And honestly, it's like, tell me one thing that you learned from class during the last week. What's one thing that you learned that was like interesting to you? And some kids will pull out a fact from math class. Some kids will pull out a fact from science. Some will say, oh, I read this great thing in English, actually, that I really liked. And to me, it's like, all right, there is a starting point. Which thing do they choose that really interested them? Oh, that interested you. Why? Why did that interest you? Like, what about that was engaging to you? And let's start diving in. Like, let's see if that's a thing. Is that something that, you know, has legs that you could really pursue? And again, like, it comes down to the student's own willingness to say, like, this doesn't have to be the end all be all of my life's passion. What I need now is something to build in, some interest, some area that I'm going to build during these next, whatever it is, you know, high school years, 3-4 years. And, you know, once I get to college, I can make any choice I want. But now I need to find a thing. Now, once you find the thing, then there's a question that you ask, which is like, how do you differentiate yourself from other people who are in that thing? I think Crimson plays a great role here because obviously, you know, like I work with students who are all around the world. So even though my students in Australia may have no idea what my students in Vietnam, you know, are doing or like what kind of stuff they're doing, I have an idea. So I can help like, you know, provide some guidance there and, you know, research local opportunities. So that's where Crimson comes in. But if you don't have Crimson or even with Crimson, like, I don't think that you need that type of perspective in order to figure out. My theory about a deep interest is that if you pursue whatever you are really interested in, like with intention and, you know, via like taking initiative, you will just end up in unique opportunities. Like, I think if you're a student who, you know, so let's, we could take another example, right? Let's say you're a student who's like super academic and you're interested in math and you don't, you know, you're not super social. And so, you know, you're not going to like necessarily go and volunteer, but you know, you're really passionate about mathematics. Obviously, there are your standard extracurriculars like the Olympiad and those sorts of things, which are international. And those are great opportunities. And I would highly recommend like any student who's interested to get involved in that sort of stuff. But there are lots of other ways too. And if you choose one area of mathematics as your deep interest, like when it comes to math or specific areas of math, there are a few experts in the world on most mathematical concepts. And so if I'm a student in high school and I'm, you know, I'm super passionate about what, and unfortunately, I don't know enough about math to even come up with an example here. It's not my field. But if I'm super passionate about one area, what I would do is I would go and look up like PhD students at a US college that I like, you know, okay, I'd love to go to UPenn. So I go and look up like UPenn's PhD program in math, because I'm looking for, in particular, I'm looking for, you know, students, PhD students who are interested in like some kind of, you know, high level algebra. Okay, so I go through the PhD list and I guarantee there's going to be like one kid, you know, one student, one PhD student who's interested. I write him an email. That's the beginning of something, right? So it's, again, it's just about taking initiative. When I write that email, right, that's something that my classmates are not going to do. Guarantee. Like, that's just that they're not going to do that because, you know, they're not going to choose the same person at the same school. It's all about like, how much initiative can you take? How much can you dig in? And kids need to be creative. You know, they need to think creatively. Like, that's part of what makes a competitive application. And what I was saying before is like, admissions officers want to see that, you know, you really went above and beyond in your deep interest. They want to see that you pushed yourself intellectually. You know, you don't have to compare yourself to other students. It's really just like, you know, did you keep your head in your textbook and, you know, just like, do well on the SAT, or did you do something more? You know, did you try to expand and build?
Yeah, absolutely. Is there any particular activity or place where students can put their time that you think is generally not worth their time? Because like I've spoken to students who have like a Marseille violin and piano, and that's the card that they're going to try and play when they go to college. And my general feeling on that is like, okay, great, you've sunk a heap of time, I'm sure, a heap of time into music, but there's probably not necessarily a shortage of great violinists and great pianists who are applying already. So is there any other example? It doesn't have to be music, but any particular kind of activities that you think students generally sink too much time in that's not overly productive in terms of gaining admission?
The broad answer is I see students all the time who will like basically join a club and then just participate in the club at the like baseline membership level, or even, you know, they'll take on some like kind of lower level, you know, they'll become like the secretary treasurer of some club where they don't really do much, you know, there's like not much responsibility. And they'll sort of hope that like that just the title of that position will like give them some big advantage or whatever, or just being a member of such and such club will give them no. That it just doesn't. It doesn't help that much. And the same thing goes for like the music thing of like, you know, well, I passed the exam and I got this certification or whatever. It's like there are so many thousands of kids who have done that. And, you know, if you're trying to apply to conservatory, you know, okay, sure, you should check that box, right? It's just like the SAT. Like, you know, you need to get a good enough score on the SAT. But no college is going to look at your SAT score and be like, wow, we have to let that kid in. That's just not how this works, you know? So it's not a differentiator. And the reason it's not a differentiator is because so many hundreds of thousands of students do this. They'll join a club at the base level and just kind of be a member. And it's like, there's nothing there, you know, there's no substance there unless it's really meaningful to them and they've really contributed something big. So I still see this all the time where, you know, students will sort of be like, oh, in order to apply to be a successful applicant, I need to have a bunch of things on my extracurricular list. So I'm just going to throw a bunch of stuff at a wall and like see what sticks. And so then when we get, you know, when it comes time to put their extracurricular list together, it's like, yeah, I've been in this club for 3 years, but I've never really done anything. You know, we have a meeting a week and it's fine, whatever. And I'm like, well, you know, okay, well, tell me more. You know, did you ever go on a trip or did you organize something, you know, for the club? And it's like, well, you know, I did this little event, but, you know, I didn't really care about it. It's like, okay, why did you spend all this time doing all these different things that you don't care about? Like, that's the problem for me, is that students just try to do so many things and they don't really care that much about them. So if I were to give one blanket piece of advice, it's stop doing things you don't care about. Like, that is not what admissions officers are looking for. They're not looking for a bunch of crap that goes on a list, because look, when they receive that, that's how they read it too. Like, they can see when you're passionate about something versus when you've just done a bunch of things because you thought that's what you had to do. They're not interested in letting kids in who do the latter. They want kids who do it, who do the activities they do because they love them and they dig deeply into them. So when it comes to something like music, you know, you have this question of like, all right, well, every kid's going to take those exams and get those certifications. So how do I differentiate? And there are like a million answers. There are so many different places in an individual's local community where they could volunteer, you know, their time to teach music, to play music for a benefit. You know, they could go to a hospital and play music for patients there. Or they could volunteer with a music therapist, or they could volunteer to teach kids at the local church on the weekend. You know, and those sorts of opportunities can build into something much bigger. You know, and those they can build into recommendation letters and you know, mentors and connections and things like that. Colleges want to see, like, do you care about something that you're doing? And if you care, dig in, like do more of that thing, do more activities relating to that thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it kind of reminds me of my days playing violin at the old age homes that I had around here in Australia. It was a bit of fun. They love it. Obviously, like, COVID is throwing a curveball, I think, in a lot of those activities in terms of access to these kind of opportunities. But, you know, if you get creative, there's a good organization here that was started by some students in Melbourne called Letters Against ISO. And it was like students who banded together to write letters to people in aged care to basically just kind of have pen pals to, you know, try and make them feel less isolated in an, you know, time where it is very isolating. So
I have to say, this is one of my students who started this, Hannah.
Yes, I didn't know that. Oh my God, that's funny. That's very funny. I didn't know she actually was your student. That's so cool.
And I can take absolutely no credit for this. This was all her. She created this. It's an amazing organization. She's done just a fantastic job leading it. But yeah, she's awesome. And that organization has sent like tens of thousands of letters to, you know, like hundreds, maybe thousands of different seniors. And now it's in multiple countries. And I mean, it's just amazing what she's done.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's awesome, man. I actually didn't know that she was your student. And I swear that's not set up for anybody who's listening. No, that's very, very cool. Now, I want to still touch on the academic side of things because I think it would be remiss of us to not at least address the whole idea of how students can further bolster their academics in the absence of the SATs and that kind of thing. Yep. We'll just touch on that quickly. I know like APs have been thrown around. We do that through CGA these days. There's students who are looking at, you know, whether they should really go towards IB or do extra A levels, these kinds of things. Obviously, like, as you mentioned, the extracurricular side of things of, you know, if you're a biology student, go spend time volunteering at a marine conservatory. And that's probably going to be much more impressive for those students aiming for biology courses. But from your point of view, without the SAT subject test, et cetera, I think a lot of students are going to be panicking a little bit. What would be your advice in that situation?
So, and I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but it really does come back to this idea of like diving deeply into your academic areas of talent or skill. So we can start with some basics. You know, you don't have the SAT subject test. How are you going to illustrate expertise in a certain subject? There are now so many online courses and really good ones like through edX that you can take. And you can get certificates with them. You know, you can take a Harvard class and get a certificate, you know, through edX. It's rather remarkable. And I would highly recommend that students do that in subjects that are interesting to them. And I would say, like, aim to take maybe a couple courses that dig deeply into interdisciplinary areas of, like, that you know, hover around a common theme. So, you know, for example, if you're interested in international relations, I would say, like, take a class on the politics of China, you know, take a class on how like poverty can offset development in, you know, burgeoning countries and economies. Take these classes where you can draw a thematic through line through the different classes, but they're not just all on the exact same topic. Because, you know, a big part of what colleges are looking for is like interdisciplinary engagement with a general theme. Mm-hmm. So I love online courses for this reason. There's online immersion courses from Columbia. These are amazing. There are actual certifications in things like, you know, technological subjects, coding. There's a great one, a certification from Cornell that I've recommended to computer science students in the past. You could write a research paper on an academic subject that interests you. You know, so try to dig deeply into, you know, let's say you have a question on, you know, how to create a like reusable water source, you know, in a like village setting that doesn't have a lot of technology. Mm-hmm. And so you do research on like, what are the existing technologies that could be used? You know, what would be most functional? What's been tested? You know, this is just a random example, but like kind of engaging deeply in your academic subject and then trying to publish it. And look, if you can't find a journal, and there are some journals out there for high schools, but if you can't find a journal, put it on Medium. Like, just put your writing out there. Like, you can self-publish, it's fine. Make a YouTube video about it. Obviously, there's the, like, you know, building legacy projects thing. So that's like apps, companies. You know, this is sort of a now a more popular method of like illustrating your interest in something. So, you know, if you're super interested in healthcare, you know, building an app that helps people understand the local hospital system. And this local hospital is particularly, you know, strong for, you know, this type of surgery. And this local hospital has a doctor who's a specialist in this or whatever. You know, I'm just throwing out kind of random examples. But I think the kind of overarching answer is like, there are a lot of ways to dive deeply into these like critical subject areas that illustrate expertise, like beyond the SAT2 or any standardized exam. And I think tests have always been the least interesting way of doing that. And so now that they're getting rid of them, it's like, for me, it's like, I'm not that bothered. I think it's a good thing. It'll force kids to think a little bit more outside the box, you know, actually like try to engage deeply with their subject areas. You pulled out a couple recommendations at the top that I think are great. Like, if you can take A levels, do it. If you can take AP exams, do it. If you can take IB exams, do it. Like, these are all great illustrations of academic skill, but they're not the only thing. There are definitely other ways to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. But one thing that I am interested in as well is, how should students tell their parents that this is a good use of their time when a lot of parents come from, and I've chatted to students like this on the podcast, like parents come from, you know, India or China or like academically rigorous backgrounds, right?
Yep.
And then their child's like, hey, I'm going to go volunteer at the old age home, or I'm going to join a marine conservatory. And then like parents are like, what are you doing? Right. Study, please. Like if you're going to get into Harvard, study. And it's a real challenge. So what would you say to students in that situation or to parents in that situation to kind of help them get on the same page?
Yeah. So typically what I say is there is basically, so when I think about Harvard, okay, so let's just use Harvard as an example. Obviously Harvard, you know, is like the top school, but let's use it as an example. There's something like 60,000 applications every year, somewhere around that, like 50 to 60,000 applications every year. They admit about 2,000 students. So, you know, incredibly competitive. And what you have to ask yourself as a student and as a parent, you know, of a student is there any subject that I'm working in right now where just my skill in this subject is going to be better than 50,000 other applicants, the best other students in the world? That's the question. Because really what it comes down to is like at least 10 to 12,000 of the applicants to Harvard are academically qualified to go there. So already you have like 5 to 6 times the number who can actually get in, like who Harvard has room for. You have 5 to 6 times that number who are qualified. So academic qualifications are so far from enough. It's just not enough because it doesn't differentiate you. You need that and that deeper digging into your subject area, you know, that great extracurricular. You need these deeper things. It's not enough. Now, to be clear, you know, students who are actually aiming for top schools like that shouldn't sacrifice their, you know, academic, their grades, you know, for the sake of an extracurricular. If they find themselves slipping academically, I think that always, you know, you need to be performing at the highest standard for yourself that you possibly can. Particularly, you need to be performing like against your peers, you know, very competitively, because that's when colleges are looking, you know, they're really looking at you versus the rest of the kids at your school who are applying or the rest of the kids in your country who are applying. So, you know, they're looking at your academics in that context. So you need to make sure you're still, you know, being very competitive there. You don't want to let that slide, but it's just not enough by itself. And putting all of your time into getting all of the perfect grades without any of that deeper, you know, diving into your subject areas, it's just not going to result in the success that I think parents and students really seek. So that's the key. It's that differentiating factor. And it's remembering like, look, just getting great grades isn't going to make me look different from all the other thousands of kids who get great grades.
The stats don't lie at the end of the day. Exactly. And I think if parents and students both got on the same page with that and were like, okay, then how do we differentiate ourselves?
That's
like,
right.
That's the real key. Well, Gabe, it's been awesome having you on the College Chats podcast. And if you would like a chance to work with someone like Gabe, then by all means, jump into the show notes and there will be a link there for a free 1-hour consultation with an academic advisor who will kind of help you pick your path potentially to the world's top universities. But Gabe, thank you again for joining us on College Chats. And look forward to sharing the episode far and wide.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Top of the Class. Subscribe for future episodes. For show notes and to plan your best future, head to crimsoneducation.org.